Are you looking for Christmas cards that combine beautiful art with a clear Christian confession? Emmanuel Press offers Christ-centered, affordable cards in a variety of designs. You'll find cards with stained glass, illumination, German frescoes, and other unique artwork found only at Emmanuel Press. Visit their website, emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is the headline. Christ's burial slab uncovered for the first time in centuries. Now, it was never lost, just covered up. And it's located in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is itself a very, very interesting and significant archaeological site. So for the first time in centuries, scientists are going to get a chance to lay eyes, instruments, maybe even hands, upon the burial slab of Jesus located there at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Joining us to talk about this story, Dr. Craig Evans, professor of Christian origins and dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, the Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Let's start with the big picture here. Someone visits Jerusalem and is planning to go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Set their expectations for what they're going to see there.
Well, what they're going to see, it won't look like a tomb at all. You'll approach on the outside and you see a great big Byzantine-style church jammed in the middle of a very crowded area of the old city of Jerusalem. So that's a bit of a surprise. And, you know, if you know anything about Jewish burial traditions, you think, well, wait a minute, aren't tombs outside the city walls? And one of the first things you have to learn is, well, actually, where this church now stands, that was outside the city walls in the time of Jesus. So that's the first thing you need to know. And so what we've seen is an expansion of the city, and of course, people love to be near holy sites, and so it's become very crowded. You'll also see kind of a funny look to the church, because it's been damaged. Muslims have tried to destroy it down through the centuries. It's been damaged, rebuilt, and so on. And the church itself now is, you might say, administered or curated by three or four different denominations. So it's an interesting location. When you walk inside, it's dark. The lighting is sort of a dappled lighting, a lot of candles. It'll smell like wax, smell like incense, and it's crowded. And you'll see what look like shrines. And one will be very ornate and very large and decorated on the outside. And there'll be lines of people trying to get into it. And that's the very place a medieval structure standing atop a very special spot. And that's the spot that people believe is the very spot where the body of Jesus was laid to rest and stayed for one weekend before the resurrection. So that's what you see. And I remember the first time I saw it 25 years ago. It is a bit off-putting. As a Protestant, I come in, I go, wow, it's almost like, was Jesus a Catholic? I mean, or Greek Orthodox? What's going on? You have these censers hanging around. You've got all this ornate material, decorations, the incense, the candle smell, and crowded with people. So it's nothing at all the way it would have looked 2,000 years ago, but what you're looking at is 2,000 years of history.
So before we zoom in on the burial slab, how, in the estimation of kind of the considered opinion of even in the short history of archaeology, but in the very, very long history of this site is indeed ancient in the extreme, how close are we to the burial site?
Well, there is not one thing about this location that's wrong in the sense that we know from archaeology that it just can't be that place. And what do I mean? Well, I already hinted at it. In the time of Jesus, this is the crucial point, was this site outside the walls of the city of Jerusalem or not? If it was inside the walls, if that could be showed that in the year 30 A.D., that location was inside the walls and almost certainly would be excluded. But we know that from archaeology, we know where the walls are. That's a virtual certainty. We know where the walls were, In the time of Jesus, we know where the walls were some years later as the city began to expand right up until the time it was destroyed. And then the walls, of course, moved around a little bit in the medieval period, the Crusaders and Muslims and so on. And so, yes, it's in the right location. But what really impresses me is the history of that site. The reason that Constantine's mother chose that site in the early 4th century for building the church, she traveled there. She asked Christians who lived in the area, where is the place where Jesus was put to death? Where was his body placed? Where did the resurrection occur? And they pointed to a place over which stood a Roman pagan shrine that was built in the early 2nd century after Jerusalem was destroyed yet again in a revolt against Rome. And, you know, you think, boy, that's a lucky guess. You point to a pagan shrine, and Constantine's mother, Helen, says, okay, tear it down. They tore it down and dug underneath it, and guess what? They uncovered early 1st century A.D. tombs. And, you know, was that a lucky guess or what? And that shows you that the people living there, there was this continuous memory that went back. And so even though the tomb was covered for 200 years, they still remembered that was the spot. And archaeology has in fact shown that this is a tomb that could easily be dated to the year 30, give or take a few years. So that's why I said there isn't anything about it, its location or even its discovery in the 4th century that led to the building of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, there isn't anything about it that says it can't be the correct tomb. So most archaeologists that I know think it's 50-50 or even better than 50-50, and it could be, therefore, the right spot.
The slab that is being uncovered for the first time since the 16th century, what are we talking about here?
Well, this is consistent with Jewish burial practices, and so when a person died, the body was washed, perfumed, and wrapped, and placed on a slab inside a cave. Oftentimes it was a cave that was then carved out to make it a little larger, or in a completely new man-made cave. In this case, the Gospels tell us it was an upscale tomb. It was brand new. No body had ever been put in it before. And so the body of Jesus was placed in it. Now, the expectation would be that mourners would go to the tomb and weep and wail, unless it's a criminal. You weren't allowed to make a public show. It had to be quiet. And after 7 days of mourning, the tomb then is sealed up. And 1 year later, the bones are gathered up. And if you've been executed, you know, you're in a place not of honor, you're not in your family tomb, and so 1 year later your bones are gathered up and relocated to, you know, the law permits that, and then the skeletal remains are placed in either a niche, that is a little cutout inside the tomb where other family members' bones could be placed, or placed in a bone box called an ossuary. So undoubtedly, that's what Jesus' family would have expected. I mean, out of pity, Joseph Arimathea says, look, the body of Jesus doesn't have to be placed in a criminal's tomb. By law, it can't be placed in a tomb of honor, but this is a neutral tomb. It hasn't been used yet. And so the body of Jesus is placed in the tomb of Joseph Arimathea. And I'm sure Joseph Arimathea thought, well, you know, he'll be there for a whole year. And a year later, his family can come, the law permits that, and remove his bones and maybe take them to another place in Jerusalem, or maybe take them up north to Galilee, or wherever the family tomb is, that they would be allowed to do that. Of course, what they didn't expect was 3 days later his body would be gone and the tomb would be empty. So I think the Church of the Holy Sepulchre could well be in the right place, and Jesus' body would have been placed on a slab. And that's why everybody's focused on this slab. Could it be the very slab on which the body of Jesus was placed almost 2,000 years ago?
Why would they? It's been covered, according to the news reports, in marble since the mid-16th century. Why would that have been done?
Well, now that's no surprise at all. That's typically what is done. For example, if you go to the place where some believe Jesus was born, it's covered in gold. There's ornate brass work, polished. There are jewels. So that's what's happened here. It's this. It's called a marble cladding, and we think it was placed over the slab to protect it, to make it more ornate, and probably in the middle of the 16th century. And that's what's rather exciting about it, because they're removing it now after it has been there for 500 years or almost. And then we want to find out, well, what's beneath it. And so they will be able to tell two things. Number one, is it actually a burial slab? I'm sure archaeology will be able to confirm that. And then secondly, in confirming it, they likely can date it, or at least guesstimate, if not an exact date. In other words, if it's 1st century B.C., that's way too early. If it's 2nd century A.D., that's way too late. And so that's where archaeology can really help. So if they confirm those two things, that it really is a burial slab, not just some ground that somebody covered with ornate stone, marble later, and is it, you know, and we can tell by the way it's designed, the way the stonemason did his work. There are various ways we can tell, approximate the dates of these kinds of things. So if it is confirmed to be an early 1st century burial slab in a tomb, then that would be yet one more step towards suggesting that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre really is the right place where Jesus' body was placed.
So they're going to be looking at something akin to, people think of a slab and they're going to think of full body length stone table or something like that, but it's probably more modest than that.
Oh, yeah. I've been in many tombs. I know what they look like. Typically, it's like a carved into the side of the tomb, and what you have then, it's like an arch. And so the arch is above the slab, and so the slab doesn't stick out. Don't think of it like in a mortuary or in an ME's office or something like that. It's not a gurney. It's not a table, but it's carved out on the side, and the body is simply laid on this shelf, as it were, with this arch above it. And the funeral goes on for 7 days. That's why the body is perfumed. You can imagine how unpleasant the smell would be by the end of this 7 days of mourning. And then a year later, the bones then are gathered up. And by the way, the stonework there is limestone. And so flesh decomposes very quickly. So after 12 months, all that's left is a skeleton. It's disarticulated and placed in a little stone chest that we call an ossuary. So that was the expectation. And, of course, the whole process was abridged. It was cut short by the resurrection.
With about 2 minutes here before we have to wrap up, what kind of questions is the archaeologist, and, of course, this is getting into some real kind of other hard sciences as well, what kind of questions are they going to have?
Yeah, of course, that's a good question, Todd. That's exactly why they're doing this. The question they have in mind is, can we confirm that it really is a burial slab? And microscopic analysis, just looking at the slab, examining how it was carved, was it carved, or is it just some flooring? See, what happened was when Helen had the church built in the 320s A.D., unfortunately, you know, they wanted to cut the top off. They wanted to lay a foundation for the church. And so they didn't think about what a future archaeologist might want. And so a whole lot of the archaeological evidence, the architectural evidence, was compromised. And so what we're left then with is just the bottom of the niche. We're just left with the flooring of some of the tomb. That's all we have. So the walls are mostly gone. Of course, the ceiling is long gone. And so we just have to work with the best that we have and what's left. But I would think if it truly is a burial niche, a slab on which a body's placed, the forensic evidence, microscopic evidence, chemical testing, and things like that. I mean, if a body decomposes, if fleshly matter oozes into the stone, there are microscopic traces. And just the way it's been carved can be determined, too. So I think they can determine and confirm that it's a slab and quite possibly determine its date. And if they do that, that's a huge, huge advance. And by the way, it's the National Geographic Society that's taking the lead. And so I've worked with them before. They do serious work. So this is not some kind of a joke. There are no crackpots involved. This is a very serious study.
Dr. Craig Evans is professor of Christian Origins and dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. You can purchase it under the Listen on Demand page at IssuesETC.org. Dr. Evans, thank you for your time.
You're most welcome.
In hour two of Issues Etc., Reformation Week continues. On this Thursday afternoon, as we move through Luther's inner circle, we come to three people, not just a single person today. We're going to be talking about men who occupied the electoral office in Saxony. The first one, Luther's prince, was Frederick the Wise. He was followed by John the Steadfast and then John Frederick the Magnanimous. We'll talk about all of Luther's princes and their place in the Reformation as Issues Etc. Reformation Week continues with Pastor Paul McCain after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come, there is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.